This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Cambie podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. With COVID cases rising in Oregon, Multnomah County health officials advised the public on Wednesday to mask up when inside public places. The Oregon Health Authority said Thursday that those at risk for severe disease should consider doing so. Dr. Jennifer Fines, Multnomah County's health officer, said educators and school children should wear masks. The academic success, social well-being, and mental health of our kids should be a top priority, Vines said in a statement. That's why we strongly recommend indoor masking in schools. Health officials said those at high risk, which includes older people, should get tested as soon as they develop symptoms and check with their doctor about treatment. Options include pills and infusions like remdesivir, which used to be in short supply. If taken early, it can reduce the chance of needing hospital care. Paxlovid, a pill that's taken over 5 days, also has been shown to prevent serious illnesses. The agency has logged nearly 1,300 new cases a day over the past week. That's as high as last winter's surge and is approaching the level seen last summer during the Delta surge when hospitals were running out of beds. On September 1st, when Delta hospitalizations peaked, 1,178 people with COVID were hospitalized in Oregon. On Thursday, Oregon's COVID hospitalization count was 226, including 32 people in intensive care. That compares with 88 hospitalizations nearly a month ago, with 14 in intensive care. State health experts expect hospitalizations to peak at slightly above 300 in mid-June. Behind the current surge is the BA.2 strain of COVID-19, which scientists say appear to be the most infectious variants to date. The strain became dominant in Oregon in March and now account for all cases, health authority data show. According to health officials, vaccines are effective against BA.2. As of Thursday, nearly three-quarters of all Oregonians were vaccinated and another 38% had received at least one booster dose. People 50 and over qualify for a second booster 4 months after their first one, and health experts say the state's high vaccination rates among the most at-risk populations has made a difference in Oregon. Nevertheless, people continue to die. The total reached 7,548 people in Oregon on Thursday. Nationwide, the fatalities are near 1 million. In their memory, Governor Kate Brown ordered flags on public buildings to be lowered to half-staff until sunset on May 16th. I hope that as we remember all those that we have lost, we collectively continue to help protect each other from this disease, Brown said in a statement. Cambie High School's theater's production of Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, has been cut short due to a coronavirus outbreak, officials reported on Friday afternoon. The high school theater troupe presented its debut performances to rave reviews last week, but along with Principal Greg Dinsa, announced ahead of Thursday's 7 p.m. showtime that the night's performance would be canceled due to illness, but hope to hold Friday and Saturday shows as planned. It was not to be, as Dinsa sent an email before 2 p.m. confirming all remaining performances would be canceled due to a COVID-19 outbreak affecting an undisclosed number of students in the theater program and other classes. As members of the school community, we understand that this might raise concern, Dinsa said. We are working closely with the Clackamas County Health Authority. Due to privacy rights, we cannot share any additional information regarding the individual. According to school tradition, the annual musical had been planned for 2 weekends, with 7 p.m. shows on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and a 2 p.m. matinee on Saturday. We are saddened that we aren't able to share our second weekend of Sweeney Todd performances with the Canby community. Sullivan McIntosh, CHS drama advisor and the director of Sweeney Todd, said, "The cast and crew are a team of incredible students whose dedication to creating this show deserves the highest of recognition. Sweeney Todd was a delight to put on, and I am so proud of everyone who has been involved and thankful for the support of the students' families throughout the process. The care of this tight-knit group will continue to allow the connections and creativity amongst the CHS theater community to flourish despite the many challenges of the school year." District Communication Director Kristen Wollers told The Current Friday the cancellations are due to a combination of illnesses. In fact, COVID had not been a factor in the cancellation of Thursday's show. She said the school is looking at the possibility of showcasing the students' work on this production at a future date. Officials asked that parents monitor their students for symptoms and keep them home if they are not feeling well. The best way to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and other viruses is through staying home when ill, wearing face coverings, physical distancing, getting vaccinated if eligible, and practicing good health hygiene habits, Dinsa said. Be sure to wash your hands frequently with soap and water, cover your coughs and sneezes, and avoid contact with people who have signs of illness. Get plenty of rest, exercise, and eat a healthy diet. Protect the community by following the governor's safety requirements. Oregon Governor Kate Brown on Friday issued a proclamation allowing the state attorney general to investigate reports of baby formula price gouging. There is a nationwide shortage of baby formula, with 43% of the nation's baby formula being out of stock, according to the retail pricing data website DataSembly. The shortage started in the early days of the pandemic and worsened because of labor shortages and a February recall after a bacterial infection in 4 children. Brown's announcement said the proclamation was in response to reports of unusual price increases, and she's encouraging Oregonians to report if they believe they have encountered excessive prices. Many Oregon families across the state rely on baby formula to nourish their newborns and children, and it is critical that they can easily access this nutrition without abnormally increased prices, Brown said in a statement. This proclamation empowers the Attorney General and the Oregon Department of Justice to investigate instances where price gouging on baby formula may be happening and to take appropriate action if businesses are found to be in violation. Anyone who believes they have seen what they consider unusually high prices can contact the Oregon DOJ Consumer Protection Hotline at 877-877-9392. More information can be found at www.oregonconsumer.gov. The U.S. baby formula shortage has sparked a surge of interest among moms who want to donate breast milk to help bridge the supply gap, as well as those seeking to keep their babies fed. It's a pathway that won't work for every formula-fed baby, especially those with special dietary needs, and it comes with challenges because milk banks prioritize feeding medically fragile infants. Cougar Country Hometown Sports Coverage is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm that Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. With the district meets just 1 week away, the Canby Cougar track and field team faced off against Lake Oswego, Tigard, and Oregon City in the season's final Three Rivers League meet at Pioneer Memorial Stadium in Oregon City. Cohen Hall got things going with a victory in the boys' 100-meter dash, while Cam Lee nabbed fourth. Hall would finish sixth in the 200, with Omar Villanueva coming in as the top-finishing Cougar with a third-place mark. Canby continued their stretch of dominance in the mid-distance events. Tommy O'Neill set a personal record in the 400 with a winning time of 50.59 seconds, and Maddox Oliver was victorious in the 800 by 4 seconds. The Cougars were unable to notch a podium finisher in the longer events, hurdles and relays. Joel Ibarra's fourth place in the 1500 was the closest time, but Drew Pearson got them back on track. The senior won the long jump, while his teammate, Trayson Wakefield, finished out the boys' events with a second place in the triple jump. On the girls' side of the track, no Cougars managed to win an event on the day. Rayanne Shedler was one of two Cougars who came close with a second place finish in the shot put. Shedler lost to Lake Oswego's Casey Moran by 1 foot. Elsewhere, the stalwart Kenzie Biggie was the other Canby athlete to notch a podium finish. The star freshman notched a third-place finish and a PR in the 400. Ashley Peterson was just 1 second back, setting a PR of her own. While the Cougars failed to gain traction in the individual events, the Canby girls claimed second in the 4x400 relay. The team of Samantha Astorga, Ava Schreffler, Peterson, and Biggie beat out third-place Oregon City by 14 seconds.
Frankie, how many times do I have to ask you for those audio files? I need them for the next episode.
I know. Man, I told you I'm trying to upload them now, but it's taking forever.
That's super weird. I thought your new internet provider was like super fast speeds.
Well, I thought so too. I mean, sometimes it goes really fast, but then I get heavy lag and glitches when I'm trying to make FaceTime calls or play games. It has cost me quite a few missions on Call of Duty Warzone, I can tell you. Even the videos on my doorbell cam come in jittery sometimes.
Well, Frankie, other than being very bad at video games, sounds like it's trouble with your upload speeds. Most internet providers only talk about their download speeds, since those are usually way faster.
Okay, hang on a second. You're telling me there are two types of internet speeds?
Yep. And upload speed is just as important as download. Think about how much stuff we send up to the internet, like the video of you that your friends see on the FaceTime call, or the response to your commands when you're playing action video games.
You're right. It sounds like I have slow upload speeds. Wish I would have known that when I signed up for internet.
Unfortunately, a lot of providers only tout their download speeds when talking about their services. That's what sets DirectLink apart. Not only do they openly advertise them, but their upload speeds are up to 10 times faster than other providers in the area. They know how important it is to have clear video when on that Zoom interview you have for your dream job, or when you're trying to catch those porch pirates that are stealing all of your Amazon packages and the Christmas things that you got for your... You know what? It's not a big deal. Give DirectLink a call to get started at 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop/internet.
I got a grudge against those
I'm still waiting for my teddy bear to show up.
This is Roz Mason, and I'm running for State Senate District 26, which now includes Canby. I know we need affordable housing, a strong local economy, and to face climate challenges of wildfire and heat waves like last year's that hit 118 in the Dalles, where I live. Climate courage also includes upsides, like becoming more energy independent using renewables and helping our district get in on innovative technology and manufacturing jobs. I'm visiting Canby and Sandy April 14th through 16th. I'd love to see you. Visit masonfororegon.com for info and to get a yard sign. Paid for by Mason for Oregon.
Welcome back, listeners. My guest on the Canby Conversation today, I'm very excited about. He's a local sports legend. He's a legend in the sport of wrestling on the national stage. He's a Canby High School graduate, was a national champion wrestler in 1970, and recently inducted into the Oregon chapter of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. He's a wrestling coach at Woodburn High School. It's Larry Owings. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for being on the Canby Now podcast.
You're welcome.
Well, we have, for folks that don't know, quite a story to tell about you and your experiences in wrestling, but let's start right here in Canby. You grew up here, went to Canby High School, wrestled in high school. Tell us a little bit just about growing up and what your high school years were like as far as wrestling goes.
Well, I actually grew up in the 91 school area, which is part of the Canby School District, but after the eighth grade, I did go to Canby High School, and my older brothers were all state wrestling champions.
Okay.
And I was the youngest of all the boys.
By how much?
Well, my oldest brother graduated in 1954.
Okay.
And I graduated in 1968.
Right, yeah.
So that's a few years between us.
Right.
And then I had a brother that graduated in 56, and then one that graduated in 62. And another one that graduated in 65.
So people were just waiting, like, for another great wrestler to come along.
That was it. And, you know, I was the last of the bunch.
Uh-huh.
And they all said I would never be a wrestler.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I was younger, I was really pretty fat. And my nickname was Porky. And everybody called me that, you know, teachers at school, you know, friends. And
that is so mean.
I know. And
your teachers called you Porky?
Everybody did.
Oh, my word.
They made up songs about me and teased me unmercifully.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
I can't tell you the pain that I went through as
a
kid.
Oh, for sure.
Nobody should have to go through that.
No, that's awful.
But, you know, maybe that's the reason I ended up being so tough, I guess.
Maybe. And I am sorry for laughing.
It really toughened me up.
Yeah.
Although that's okay, I can deal with it now.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, it was pretty tough because back then, you know, we didn't know anything about weight control or dieting or anything like that. You know, and it was kind of like everybody just sat down at the table and we all ate and that was it.
Right.
I went to work for an old Norwegian dairy farmer between the seventh and eighth grade, and just ran me to death. I hauled hay all summer long.
Yeah.
And we ran, and I lost about 25, 30 pounds, and I grew at the same time. And so by the time I got to high school, I was about 20 pounds lighter than I was in the fifth grade.
Uh-huh.
And then I started wrestling my first year. Larry Wright was my wrestling coach. Great man. He's passed away now, but
He was a local legend in his own right.
He was a local legend, absolutely one of the best high school and college coaches around.
Yeah.
But at any rate, Larry Wright was my coach, and I started wrestling, and I did okay freshman and JV matches, and I kept challenging for the varsity slot. And finally, one day, I beat the varsity guy, and I got to be the varsity wrestler. And I was, oh man, I was on seventh heaven.
So there's just one per weight class. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, there's one varsity wrestler.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a junior varsity wrestler, and maybe several junior varsity wrestlers, and then maybe a freshman wrestler too.
Gotcha.
But at any rate, so I challenged, and I became the varsity guy. Well, the guy that I had to wrestle was from Silverton High School. And his name was Donnie Roth, and Donnie Roth was a third in state champion, the year before.
Mm.
And he turned me every way but loose and finally pinned me in the second round. And I was absolutely devastated.
Yeah, first match.
Every confidence that all the confidence that I'd built up to that point was just completely destroyed.
Yeah.
And I ended up, make a long story short, I wrestled five varsity matches that year. And after every match, you know, or every match that I wrestled, I should say, I just kind of didn't go out and wrestle. I didn't think that I could win. You know, I thought that I was going to get beat, and I ended up getting beat.
Yeah.
And wrestling is about 95% mental.
Sure.
So if you don't think you can do it,
probably
you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of the things that I've maintained. It's one of the I've got three different things that that I think are very important in life. And one of them is believe in yourself. Mm-hmm. Believe you can do it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have it at that point. Any rate, my last match that I wrestled that year, I really stunk up the mat bad. My coach asked me, says, "What's the matter, Larry? Are you sick or something? I mean, you're not wrestling like you should be wrestling."
Yeah.
And so I went home and kind of thought about that. You know, my coach thinks I'm a better wrestler than what I'm showing. And so at any rate, there was a tournament after the regular high school competition was over. They had an open tournament they called the Open Freestyle and Open Greco-Roman Tournament. Mm-hmm. There was two tournaments. I entered the Open Greco-Roman Tournament. Mm-hmm. And I went out against my first match, and I looked at the kid, and every one of my high school matches that I wrestled was varsity or was freshman or JV, I won. Mm-hmm. Never had a problem.
Yeah.
And I looked across the mat, and I saw this guy, and I thought, he looks like a JV guy.
Yeah.
And anybody could enter, so how do I know whether it was a JV or what?
Right.
So I wrestling went out there, and I thought, yeah, I can beat this guy. So I went out, and I pinned him. And I came off the mat, and Larry Wright, my coach, slapped me on the back. He says, "You knew who that guy was?" And I go, "No." And he says, "That guy just got second in state this year."
Wow.
And I go, "How?" He said, "You just beat a guy that got second in state."
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of bumped my confidence back up a little bit, you know. And so then I had to wrestle my next match, and the same thing happened. I looked at this guy, and he looked like he wasn't very tough.
Yeah.
And I thought I could beat him, and so I went out and wrestled him, and I pinned him also. And I came off the mat, and Coach Larry slapped me on the back and said, "That guy got second in state in a different weight class this year." He said, "You just pinned two guys that got second in state."
Huh.
So my confidence went up a little bit more. So I wrestled my third match, and the exact same thing happened. I came off the mat. My coach slapped me on the back and said, "That guy got second in state too, in a different division, you know, A1 or A2 or whatever." And so, you know, and to this day, right. I don't know if he was lying to me or telling me the truth or
just
what.
Just an incredible coincidence.
But at any rate, it's immaterial now because I realize now that the problem that I had wasn't that I was a terrible wrestler. I didn't believe I could do it.
Yeah.
I didn't have faith in myself.
Yeah.
So whoever's listening out there, you know, that's one of the number one things you have to have is a belief that you can do it. Mm-hmm. You can do anything that anybody else can do. The only difference between you and somebody else is the fact that they may know how to do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you can't learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And so you always want to believe that you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So any rate, so that's number one thing. Number two thing is you never want to quit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always a believer that you're never beaten unless you quit. Mm-hmm. And so just keep trying, keep trying, keep trying. It's like maybe you didn't have enough time. Maybe you didn't have enough experience. Maybe you didn't have enough confidence.
Yeah.
But eventually, if you never quit, you'll get to that point where you will have all of those things.
Yeah.
And it's real important. And it's the little things that really make the difference, you know. If you take a tree root growing underneath concrete, you know, if you tried, you've probably seen the cracks that a tree root does to the concrete sidewalks and stuff like that.
Sure, I mean, not here in Canby, of course, but maybe some other cities don't.
But any place, you know. If you tried to measure the force that root is exerting on the concrete, you can't measure it.
Yeah.
There's no force there.
Right.
But over a period of time,
that
root is able to crack that concrete. That strong concrete gets beaten by a little tiny root.
Yeah.
And that's what's real important when you're doing things is little efforts over a long period of time. You know, a little bit here, a little bit there. It'll amount to a lot eventually.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll be able to accomplish whatever you need to do. Each time you do something, you're going to do it a little bit better. Mm. And that's real important.
That's some great wisdom.
Yeah. And then the third thing that I've always believed, too, is that it's real important to look around yourself and look for ways to help other people. You know, there was And I learned this lesson by a story from the state fair. This corn farmer from Brooks, and I don't remember his name. I read the article, but anyway, he every year at the state fair, he would win first prize in the corn growing contest. He'd bring in the best corn, and he'd always get first prize. And so they finally, after years of this happening, they finally went to him and said, how is it that you can have the very best corn year after year after year?
Yeah.
And he said, well, he says, it's real simple. He says, first thing you do, he says, you find the very best corn seed that you can find. Mm-hmm. And he says, then you go out and you give the corn seed to everybody around you that has farms, that is a farmer, mm-hmm. you know, and you save just enough to plant your own field. He said, all of the pollen from these neighboring fields comes in and pollinates my corn, and my corn ends up being the very, very best.
Wow.
And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, you surround yourself with the best people, and you help your neighbors to become their very best. So I thought, how does that apply to wrestling? Hmm. And I thought, well, you know, if you're wrestling somebody, if you're taking him down with a certain move, or you're turning him over and pinning him with a certain move, tell him what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's going to make him a better wrestler. Now, because he's a better wrestler, now what do you have to do? Hmm. Well, you have to become a better wrestler. You have to learn something new in order to wrestle against this kid that maybe before you beat real easily, and now all of a sudden he's able to counter what you've been doing. And so it makes you a better wrestler. So you help those around you, and it always comes back to help you.
Yeah.
So that's those awesome are three keys in my life that I try to live by.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I love that story about the corn farmer. I'm going to have to remember that. That's quite a metaphor that's not just applicable in wrestling, but a lot of avenues. So, interestingly, of course, and we didn't mention this in the intro because I don't feel that, you know, it's necessarily fair to you to define you around this, but, of course, a lot of people do kind of anyway. We'll talk about that a little bit, but you're most known for a match when you won the national championship in 1970 against a wrestler who didn't necessarily need tips from you in that way. He was already quite accomplished. Dan Gable, known even now 50 years later as probably the greatest wrestler the amateur wrestling has ever seen. At that time, he was a three-time champion?
He was a two-time national champion, NCAA champion,
right.
And he was 180 wins in a row.
Right, right. Had never lost
never
a match
lost.
In college or high school. After this championship that we're going to talk about, never lost again. He went on to have an international career in wrestling, was in the Olympics, where he not only won every match, but didn't give up a single point.
That's great.
He was he was a legend. He's almost superhuman, you know, considered that by many people and many observers. And, you know, before we turned on the mics and started talking here, we were looking at a really cool locally made documentary that had some archival footage of the match. And Dan Gable, if you've never seen him, I mean, back then, he was a college kid, but he looks like Chris Hemsworth from Thor. I mean, he's incredible. He's handsome. He's got this incredible body and arms. I mean, he just had that look in old newspaper articles that people called him the glamour boy. I mean, he had it all. Were you you had met him before this match, right?
So yeah, I wrestled him once in high school. I was a high school senior and thought I was pretty tough. And maybe I was, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I won the Olympic Regional Tournament and qualified to go back to the National Tournament.
Right.
And so I went back to the National Tournament. I was lucky enough to get some of the local organizations around here to help sponsor me go back because I didn't have any money, you know. I wouldn't have been able to go back any other way. But went back there, and the first match that I drew was Dan Gable. And he was already a national champion in college.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know anything about wrestling or not, but you try to compare a high school wrestler to a college national champion, there's a big difference.
Yeah,
big difference. Anyway, I wrestled Dan Gable, and I ended up putting him on his back during the match, but he ended up outscoring me, and he beat me 9-4, I think, or 9-5. I'm not sure exactly what, but it was...
We'll say 9-5.
Yeah, that sounds better. but at any rate, so I lost to him. And then my second match in the tournament, I wrestled... a guy by the name of Tom Huff, who was a two-time national champion from Colorado Springs. And
Lucky draw for you.
Yeah, it's a lucky draw. He beat me 6-4.
Yeah.
And I went back to the back to Canby with my tail between my legs,
yeah.
And I thought, wow, this college is pretty tough. I didn't know that I drew probably the two toughest guys in the whole nation.
Well, yeah, you just had this luck of, I mean, like that first high school tournament where you got three number two finishers in the state right in a row.
So. Yeah. So, at any rate, it was a good lesson for me and kind of knocked my confidence down a little bit. Well, I don't want to say knocked my confidence down, but it made me realize that I have to work a lot harder mm-hmm. if I was going to be a national champion.
Yeah, yeah. So you went to college at University of Idaho.
University of Washington.
He was Idaho. Dan Gable's Idaho, right?
No, Dan Gable was Iowa.
Iowa, excuse me.
Okay. Iowa State.
Okay. So you went on to college at the University of Washington.
Correct.
And you were, I believe, a sophomore in 1970?
In 1970, I was a sophomore, yes.
Yeah. So tell us about the first, as a freshman on the wrestling team, you were in a different weight class from Dan Gable, right?
Well, back in that time, freshmen could wrestle on the national level. However, they couldn't wrestle varsity in the Pac-8.
Oh, okay.
So I was relegated to just wrestling JVs and freshman matches, junior college matches and stuff like that. I couldn't wrestle on the varsity team because I was ineligible. Freshmen were ineligible for that. But I was eligible for the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrestled all year long, I think at 150, 158, and I won all my matches. And then I was able to challenge our varsity guys on the Washington team mm-hmm. and make the varsity team. So I challenged at 115 and beat the guy there. So I could have gone at 150, and I thought, well, that's too much weight for me. So I cut down.
Yeah.
Then the next weight down was 145, and I beat the guy there. I could have gone that. And I thought, no, I think I better go one more weight lower.
Mm-hmm.
And the next weight down was 137, and I beat the guy there. And then I come to the strange realization that Dan Gable was at 137 pounds.
Mm.
And I thought, I don't think I'm quite ready for him. I'm going to have to cut another weight class.
Yeah.
So I cut down to 130 pounds.
Oh, okay.
And I wrestled at the national tournament there at 130 pounds. I won three matches.
Uh-huh.
And then I lost my fourth match. And back then, if the guy that beat you lost his next match, you were out of the tournament.
Oh.
Since then, they've made it double elimination so that you can lose one and then you get put back in and you can come through. Because I actually had a fifth place seed in the tournament. Dale Thomas, the coach at Oregon State, argued for a fifth seed for me because I'd beaten so many guys that were really, really good.
Yeah.
And he knew that I was tough. And I ended up being exactly in a fifth seed place.
Yeah.
And back then, if you were in fifth seed place, you got beat by the guy that got third, and then you got put out of the tournament.
Yeah.
So you could never place fifth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at any rate, they've changed that now, and so now you're able to place like you're supposed to be able to.
Sure.
So at any rate, so I didn't place at all in the NCAA that year.
Disappointment.
And then after that season was over, they had a national freestyle and national Greco-Roman tournaments. And I went to those. And instead of going 130 pounds, I jumped up a couple weight classes. I went at 149 and a half pounds.
Hmm.
I wrestled in the National Greco-Roman Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I became the champion at 149 and a half pounds. In the finals, I wrestled a guy from Japan. It was by the name of Hattori, I believe is his name,
mm-hmm.
who had... I believe he was the fifth in the World Games that year.
Wow.
And I ended up pinning him in the finals. And then in the freestyle tournament, I wrestled through that, and I beat everybody in that tournament, too. I pinned everybody but one person in that tournament, and I got the most falls trophy for that. So I won two national championships, one in freestyle and one in Greco-Roman.
Yeah.
And was the outstanding wrestler in one of those tournaments and had the most falls in the other tournament.
Yeah, yeah. little bit of a confidence builder there.
Yeah. So then that finished up my freshman year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it was on to the sophomore year.
On to the sophomore.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from the sponsors who make this show possible. When we return, more of the incredible true story of Larry Owings and Dan Gable and the match that made sports history.
Hey, Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something. Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay, well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I'm AJ. I'm your local Oddmos franchise owner.
I'm Mike, co-founder of Oddmos.
And we're the hosts of The Odd Pod, a podcast about
life in the pizza industry. We're going to have on some franchisees. We're going to have some different vendors on. We're going to get a snapshot of what goes on behind the scenes in the pizza world.
Don't forget to tell them about the sports.
They're sports.
And the crazy wacky pizza that we have every Wednesday that we create. And we also have a special guest every week as well.
And I'm Gage, Odd Pod senior sports analyst.
Gage, who gave you that title?
Me.
Oh boy. Find us on Spotify and Apple Music and the Podbean.
And it was on to the sophomore year.
On to the sophomore year, and you knew, I guess, coming in that if you wanted another crack at Dan Gable, this was going to be the last chance. It was his senior year, so he was going to be moving out of the college circuit.
That's correct. Dan Gable was a senior. He had won the national tournament 2 years in a row and was the outstanding wrestler, I believe, both of those years.
Sure.
Maybe it was just 1 year, but he was a phenomenal wrestler.
Right. Right.
Best in the nation, right, as far as anybody was concerned.
And, I mean, I can't overstate, like, I've read newspaper, famous across the country as a college wrestler. I mean, college wrestling isn't necessarily what it was then, but it was a household name was Dan Gable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you can imagine winning 180 matches in a row and never losing a match.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people would do kind of what you did freshman year. You know, they would try to avoid Dan Gable. They would try to, like, you know, not be in his weight class. So by the time, you know, he had such a reputation. But you were doing the opposite. You were kind of gunning for him a little bit. You wanted another crack at him.
I wrestled at 158 pounds that year on our team all year long, mm-hmm, because that's where the coach needed me. And I was the Pac-8 champion at 158 pounds. Mm-hmm. Wrestled Kim Snyder, another Canby boy.
Yeah, cool.
In the finals, and I beat Kim 12-5. Kim was a great wrestler. He ended up, I think, third in the NCAA.
Oh, wow.
At 158 pounds.
Cool. Shout out to
great,
Kim Snyder.
Great wrestler.
Yeah.
And he was a state freestyle champion for Canby High School also.
Oh, cool.
But at any rate, I was wrestling heavier than what I should have been. So I knew the year before I cut to 130, and that was too much for me. So this year, they had changed the weight classes, And so the weight class that I thought was the very best for me was 141 pounds. Mm-hmm. And again, we found out that Dan Gable was going to be there. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like, well, I avoided him the year before. And so this year, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to go right full steam straight ahead and see what we can do.
Yeah.
And
One thing about Dan Gable, obviously, you know, he had the physique. He had talent. From things that I've read, he was very cerebral in his approach to wrestling. He would, you know, really study. He knew, he knew his opponents. He knew their strengths, the moves they like to use, the best way to, you know, he would kind of approach it in that way. But he was most famous, I think, for his conditioning. I mean, it was almost legendary. He would wake up in the middle of the night and do push-ups just because it motivated him to know that his opponents were sleeping at the time that he was working out. I believe. And from what I've read, Larry, in preparation, you try to match his conditioning or even do better.
I never woke up in the middle of the night and did push-ups. No, I didn't do that. I think I did the regular workouts during wrestling practice, you know.
Okay.
And then I did running every day outside of that. I would run usually about 3 miles a day in the mornings to kind of split it up a little bit. And then I had a weightlifting class that same year that I was in, and I also was in a gymnastics class, so I got physical exercise out of both those too. So I was getting quite a bit of physical exercise. Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. So tell us about the tournament.
You mean the
1970?
Well,
Dan Gable was.
Dan Gable's undefeated, and
looking to finish out his career undefeated.
He was going to finish out his college career at 181-0.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only thing that stood between that was me. I was the only guy. But it was interesting. Dan Gable pinned everybody on his side of the racket all the way to the finals.
Yeah, yeah.
And I pinned everybody on my side of the racket all the way through to the finals, too. Yeah. So it was kind of a real showdown.
Right. And also, I want to say, because, you know, because it became known and to sports writers and things that you had dropped your weight class for a chance at Dan Gable, you were called either the bravest or the smartest guy in wrestling, something.
I dropped two weight classes,
yeah.
And I was either the dumbest or the bravest guy from the world. And there were all kinds of stories going around there that, you know, I had come back there specifically to beat Dan Gable. And I don't think it was, I mean, I knew Dan Gable was there, but, and I wanted to beat him, yes, and I believed that I could beat him, but if Dan Gable had been in a different weight class, I would still probably have been at 141, because I thought that was my best weight class.
Yeah, and you wanted to win the national championship.
And I wanted to win a national title, too. I mean, I was really hungry, and I was prepped for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was mentally charged. I'm not sure there could have been anybody in the world that could have beaten me that night. Mm-hmm. I was ready.
And you believe that you could beat him. I mean, when a lot of people basically felt, like I said, he was superhuman, invincible, you didn't believe that.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And my strategy was to go out and use his strategy against him.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, he would try to out-condition his opponents, and I was going to out-condition him.
Okay.
You know, he was going to just beat on him and constantly keep him so off guard that they weren't able to do anything, and that was my strategy too, to keep him so busy that he would not be able to get into his rhythm during the match. And I think my strategy worked.
Before we turned the recorders on, we watched not the entire match, but clips of the match that were in this documentary. And I mean, what was it like for you? You've obviously rewatched it since then, I'm sure, a number of times. And we're talking about the match, like you just remember it, you know, even almost 50 years ago now. But it's like it just kind of burned into your memory, it seems.
Yeah. It you know, I've seen it enough times that it is burned in my memory. Yeah. I can remember almost every move that we did during that match, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's really incredible to watch, even for me, not being a huge fan of wrestling or knowing that much about the sport, but you just feel It's an incredible story. It's still remembered as one of the greatest upsets in all sports. And just you can see, even again for me, not knowing necessarily exactly what I'm watching, you can see both of these incredible athletes just giving it absolutely everything that they have for 9 straight minutes. You were absolutely exhausted at the end. You could tell they pulled you over for an interview and you're just gasping for breath.
Yep, I gave it everything I had.
So, describe the scene. It was just packed stadium.
Well, the stadium was packed, I wish you could have been there to listen to the crowd. You know, everybody was there anticipating Dan Gable to go out his whole career undefeated.
I believe there were like advertising campaigns and things that he was already signed on to. Yep. They were printed like 181 and zero.
Right. But then during the match, it was absolutely unbelievable. The only thing I can compare it to is like you've seen the old movies with the Roman gladiators, you know, and crowd all the way around, these two guys duking it out down below.
Yeah.
And the roar was deafening. I mean, we couldn't hear the referee. You know, the referee had to get, you know, within a couple feet of us and yell in order for us to hear.
Yeah.
The crowd was unbelievable. I know someplace I saw that it was described as the roar of Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
And it was. It was unbelievable. The noise in there. I mean, people were cheering for me. People were cheering for him. And the match went back and forth and back and forth. Yeah. And it was an unbelievable match.
Yeah.
And after the tournament, after that match was done, after I'd beaten him, the whole tournament stopped. I mean, it just stopped dead for about 10 minutes. It was kind of like, did you see what happened? Did you see it? And people were scrambling around, and newspaper reporters were scrambling. It was unbelievable.
People were apologizing for calling you a dummy. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and I don't know how much money exchanged hands during that match. But if you'd have been a betting man, you'd have been betting on Gable, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at any rate, then
I even saw it written like maybe you were the only person in that arena that thought you had a chance against it. Almost everyone was figuring this was, you know, Dan Gable had it locked up.
Yeah, so. I think my brother probably believed I could beat him, and then maybe my coach, I don't know.
Right. So maybe a couple out of thousands.
But at any rate, you know, what's also interesting is after the match, you know, we went to the podium, was presented the awards for the different places. And when they presented Dan Gable his second place award, you know, the crowd stood up and gave him a standing ovation that went on for like 10 minutes. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he deserved it.
Yeah.
He deserved it. I mean, it was unbelievable what he had accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of felt sorry that I had beaten him at that point, you know.
Yeah.
But I've talked to Dan since then, and he doesn't harbor any hard feelings, I don't think. I mean, I think he still wishes he would have won that match, but you know, I think I made him a better wrestler.
Yeah.
Because he
said that as well.
Yeah, he realized that if I could beat him, there might be somebody else out there that could also.
Yeah.
And so he doubled down on his workouts and workout partners and everything else, and I think it showed.
Yeah.
Made a big difference in how he was able to perform at the world level.
Yeah. And one thing that's really incredible, on top of even the athletic performance from both of you, but when you watch the match and read about it, is just the sportsmanship from both of you. I wonder if you remember that aspect as well. We were watching something that you wouldn't notice unless you had Larry Owens with you to point out and commentate it. But at one point in the match, I guess Dan Gable had lost a contact lens after it was over. You had seen it during the match. You went and picked it up for him. I think there was a part where you kind of helped him up. And then afterward as well, and I've seen interviews from him, I mean, there wasn't necessarily the kind of the kind of nastiness or what. I mean, he and you both had a tremendous respect for each other and have always kind of stated that. There was no kind of like, oh, he got lucky or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing, and I think quite a model for would-be and aspiring athletes for our young people today.
Yeah, I know sometimes I see these athletes, when they win the match, you know, they jump up and point their finger in the air, you know, I'm number one, you know, and pound their chest and flex their muscles and everything else, or do backflips. And I just want to say, I just want to go down there and punch them, you know?
Or pin them, maybe.
You know, it's like, you know, why would you do that? Mm. You know, it just degrades the sport. Mm. You know, there's two people out there, and you go out and you wrestle and you do the job, and you don't belittle or degrade your opponent, whether you win or lose.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and you know, I can tell you of an instance where that happened to me. I got second in the NCAA my junior and senior years. I didn't get first. Hmm. But after my senior year, I got second place in the NCAA. One of the other wrestlers who had placed in my weight class, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he came down to me and he pointed his finger at me and said, you know, Owings, he said, if I'd have been on your side of the bracket, I would have kicked your A double whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything, but he got a chance to do that later on that year, because at the Olympic Trials Tournament, I went back and I was actually going to go at 137 pounds, and I was within a couple pounds the night before. And then I realized that my wife was pregnant, and she didn't want me to go. She was going to have the baby at that time. And also, I was tired of being the guy that beat Dan Gable, and I thought, you know, I'll go up to 149.5. I'll wrestle Dan Gable. He'll beat me. And then everybody will leave me alone, you know? And that didn't work out.
Yeah.
But there was also this other guy that had told me he was going to kick my, you know what, in that weight class. And he got a chance to do that.
Yeah.
And I ended up beating him 18-3. Mm. I just pounded on him.
Yeah.
Because nobody, you don't tell your opponent that.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to say anything after that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't hear you saying that anymore.
Love it. Yeah, but just let the performance do the talking. Yeah.
So anyway, I did wrestle Dan Gable in that Olympic Trials Tournament, and he beat me. Mm-hmm. I scored a point on him, and I was the only guy to score a point on him in either the Olympic Trials Tournament or the Olympics. Mm. I was the only guy to even score on him. And I didn't even really want to win.
Yeah.
So if I'd really wanted to win and had been really working out, maybe I'd have done better.
Yeah.
The guy that went at 137.5 pounds in the weight class that I would have been ended up being a silver medalist that year.
Oh, cool.
And I beat him three times that same year.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I'd have done all right.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have. It's like you know, kind of said at the beginning, you can do, you've learned, you can do anything that you want to if you work hard enough at it.
That's right.
But the one other part of your story, obviously the incredible achievement of being the only man to have ever beaten Dan Gable, considered the greatest wrestler in the history of the sport, and to be here from Canby, which is pretty cool, or at least Canby High School. But what happened after? You know, we were kind of talking about that before we started recording as well, but the impact that, and not necessarily, at least at first, a positive impact that this amazing win had on your life and your career, and then how you managed to turn it into a positive thing in your later life.
Yeah, you know, for years I tried to hide from that. Being the guy that beat Dan Gable, you know, and it did open a lot of doors in my life, you know.
Yeah.
No question about that, you know. I got some different jobs probably because of that.
I think, and I've heard you say in other interviews that you would have preferred to be known as Larry Owings, the great wrestler, not Larry Owings, the guy who beat Dan Gable.
Yes, that's correct.
And that's why I didn't necessarily want to introduce you as that, but yeah.
Yeah, but at any rate, you know, so I struggled for years with that identity problem, you know. And then it was about 10 years ago or so, I was in bed sleeping. Mm-hmm. And I
woke up. Not doing push-ups.
And no, I wasn't doing push-ups or anything. And I woke up with a start. I mean, I just woke wide awake. Mm. And this I don't want to call it a vision or whatever you want to say, flashed into my mind, stand in sunlight if you expect to be heard. And it was so vivid that I wrote it down. I keep a little tablet by my nightstand to write things down on. And so I wrote it down on the nightstand, and it was 10 minutes after midnight. I know exactly what time it was. And I wrote it down, stand in sunlight if you expect to be heard. And it didn't say stand in sunshine, because if you stand in sunshine, you get warm. But if you stand in sunlight, you don't necessarily get warm, but you're able to be seen. And I realized then that all these years I had been hiding, kind of like my identity, and God had given me this talent in wrestling, and I was trying to hide it. And I realized then that all these years that I had been struggling with that and fighting against it had done no good whatsoever. And I realized that I was either destined to spend the rest of my life fighting against it, or I had to change my attitude. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to embrace this talent of wrestling that God gave me and use it for the benefit of others. And so from then on out, my attitude has kind of changed a little bit. Yeah. I don't feel the stress, I guess, as much with it. And I've been able to help, I can't tell you how many kids.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I've had more than one come up to me and thank me for being there and being a good role model. I particularly remember one just a few years back that he called me about a year after he was out of high school. And so, Coach, he says, I just wanted to thank you. I go, thank me? Thank me for what? He says, well, he says, you saved my life. I go, what?
Yeah.
He says, yeah. He says, I was on the wrong road. He says, I'm going down the wrong path. And he said, if it hadn't been for you and wrestling, he said, I don't know where I'd be right now. He says, right now I've got a wife and a child, and he says, I got a good job. And he says, it's all because of you. And, you know, those are the kind of things that really make you feel good about what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, and make you believe that things do happen for a reason, and that,
yep.
Yeah.
And so I think God gave me this talent in wrestling for a reason, and now it's payback time for me. So I'm coaching up at Woodburn High School still, and you know, wherever I can help, or wherever I can try to make young people better, keep them away from the video games and the drugs and the violence and the gangs and everything else, point them in the right direction, you know, that's important.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure and honor to talk to you and hear some of this story, Larry. I've really enjoyed having you on the show. We're almost out of time, but I do want to give you one last chance. Just kind of going in that vein, is there anything that you want to put out there, maybe to young people that might be listening, or just anything else that you want to share before we go?
No, just to maybe review those three things that are important in my life. You know, never quit.
Yeah.
And believe in yourself. Believe you can do it. And look for ways to help other people. Those are three important things. If you remember those three things, it'll take you a long way in life.
Cool. Well, the documentary that we've mentioned a couple times was done by a junior at Woodburn High School, Caden Christiansen.
Correct.
And it's incredible. Very, very well done. We're going to put a link out with this podcast so you guys can check that out. It goes much deeper into the story of this match and what led up to it and what you're able to use it for now, Larry. So definitely check that out if you're interested in hearing more about this really phenomenal story. Thank you, Larry Owings, for coming on the KMB Now podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad I'm able to come.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, Do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This, Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Franke. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.